This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm Michael Levin. I'm a writer, publisher, and author publicist. Need a fun satirical read? My Cider and Ale Chronicles box set is now out. Today, I'm joined by E.G. Stone. She's the author of On Behalf of Death, Speaker of Words, and The Wing Cycle. Welcome, E.G. Stone. How are you doing today?
Between the allergies and the weather, I'm still waiting for winter.
Yeah. No, I can't say that I'm looking forward to snow.
I miss snow.
Oh, you see, I used to like it too because I used to ski when I was growing up. So I kind of looked forward to winter. That was like the saving grace for me was that I actually did something that you needed snow for. Now I don't need snow for anything.
But trudging.
Other than an excuse to stay in my home and hibernate and watch a lot of Netflix.
That is a perfectly acceptable answer for winter.
I always like to start off these interviews with something not too serious and something that will get you thinking a little bit. So to start, I'd like to ask you if you could have a drink, any type of drink, with any writer, living or dead, who would that be and why?
Well, probably tea, because tea is just obviously amazing. And any writer living or dead.
Anyone. Ooh,
that one's difficult because it depends on whether I want to talk about language or story or what, or just want to have a grand old time. Probably Douglas Adams, just because he's highly entertaining.
Oh, he is so entertaining and hugely influential on me and my writing. And
yeah,
probably half of what I've searched out in bookstores to find comparable work to.
It's hard finding comparable work because you can get, you know, humorous stuff, but it's never quite the same.
Yeah, like they all try. Some of them are really good, but, you know, that was, you know, kind of the gold standard. I'd say the closest similarity would probably be Terry Pratchett, and I don't know.
Yeah, but he does the fantasy world instead of the sci-fi world. Okay, not to be rude to Douglas Adams, but Terry Pratchett's plot is perhaps a bit more precise.
Right. He went a lot further too. You're looking at, like, I don't know, maybe five books if you include the other series that he wrote. The Douglas Adams next series, I always forget.
Well, he's got, you know, The Hitchhiker's Guide, obviously, yeah. You know, Restaurant at the End of the Universe, et cetera, et cetera. And then he has Dirk Gently, the detective agency.
I knew I had heard that name Dirk before, other than in my story.
See, I wondered if that was where it came from.
No, I, you know what, maybe by osmosis. I had heard of that series. I had heard it was really good. Haven't read it.
Well, unfortunately, he didn't get to go very far because he died before he could do more with it. But Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency, it's quite entertaining. And there's a very strange couch involved. And I still don't understand the couch. But, oh well.
I got to check it out. No, the name, I had definitely not heard anything about that series at age 14.
Yes, well.
But I had played Dragon's Lair, which was a cartoon video game that was a real big deal when I was growing up, when birthday parties were at video arcades. And the main character in the Dragon's Lair video game was a knight named Dirk. And when I decided to write a story in ninth grade that involved a Dragon Slayer, it was not the same character, but it was the name that came to me.
Yes. Well, so, I mean, there are oodles of people out there with the same name, so presumably it's okay.
Yeah, and every poet is a thief anyway, they say, so what are you going to do, right?
Not much.
But, so, the other question very quickly I wanted to ask you is, does pineapple belong on pizza?
Well, that depends where you are in the world, who you're speaking with, and whether or not you're allergic to pineapple.
Right, because allergies would make something not belong to anything.
Exactly. I'm not allergic to pineapple, but my pizza is usually mushrooms, olives, tomatoes, onions, that sort of a thing.
Awesome. And you say tomatoes, too. That's awesome. I was actually having a conversation with my wife because my kids, we were at a restaurant, and my kids were singing that you say tomato, I say tomato song.
And let's call the whole thing anyone, off, yeah.
Does anyone actually say tomato, or is it yes. just like...
No, it is actually a thing.
Awesome. That's awesome. And I'm so glad I asked that question just for the, if only for that reason, then there was a point in me asking that question.
Yep.
So now we're going to get to some more writing related serious questions. Well, they're not too serious, but
I mean, a little more serious. Have you read my books? Serious?
A bit more serious than pizza. So when did you know you wanted to be a writer? And can you talk a little bit about what led to you deciding to publish a book?
Okay, those are two separate questions. I'll start with the first one. When I wanted to be a writer, I was about six, and my parents and I were driving off to some dinner somewhere doing something, as one does when you're six and have absolutely no idea how to drive a car. I was in the back, we were in traffic, and this lady in the next lane came and sort of smushed the back of the car a bit. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to write a story about that because it was annoying and loud and terrible. And so I did. And it never stopped, ever. I picked up the pencil and that was it. Of course, I've graduated to pens awesome. Now. Terribly exciting. Awesome. And the second question about publishing a book. Great. Well, that just seemed like the natural progression. If I'm going to be a writer, I might as well publish a book so that the whole world can see that, oh, yes, well, we knew it. She was going to be a writer. We're not surprised at all. And so I did. And then I never stopped Nice. Doing that either.
So you've published, you've written a lot of books because I remember Yes. when we were talking, you've got kind of this giant roadmap of books and series that you're planning on working on.
Yes.
And some that are obviously already completed. So and they're all very different. So why don't we talk a little bit about your newest series, On Behalf of Death, because A, it's awesome. B, it's satirical fantasy, which is something that I can very much relate to. So we're looking at Death's PR agent.
Yes.
Which is obviously a really, really unique and awesome concept. As somebody who works in PR, I was instantly drawn in by the character of Cal Thorpe.
Poor Cal.
He's the main character. And this guy just has some crazy stuff happen. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about On Behalf of Death and a little bit sure. about Cal and why people would be dying, no pun intended, to read about it.
Yes. Well, so the premise is that Cal is going walking through the park one night and he gets shot. And so he meets Death. And Death, instead of saying, oh, yes, welcome to the afterlife, blah, 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 all that jazz, says, I'd like to hire you to be my marketing agent. Because obviously Death has a few image issues that we need to work on. And he's decided that, okay, it's time to tackle that. So he hires Cal. And Cal then has to, figure out how one actually markets Death without being severely creepy. And then, of course, things get a little more complicated when Life gets involved and accuses Death of murder, which Death says he didn't commit. And that's basically the premise of book one, is Cal figuring out, okay, how can there be a murder that Death didn't commit? And book two is Cal goes back in time to fix relationship problems between Life and Death in the Italian Renaissance with Machiavelli involved. That was fun. Book three is Cal and the tax man, because Death's cousin is not fond of having stuffed peppers thrown at him. Although, to be fair, that wasn't Cal's fault. Book four is Death is on holiday and Cal is taxed as his proxy, which ends badly. I mean, basically, it's just Cal being stuck into all sorts of unfortunate situations and things going sideways, because that's just what happens.
Right. What I really like about the series is that, and I think it's with anything that's marketed as humorous or satirical fantasy or sci-fi, you've got that kind of perception going into it that it's going to be, the whole thing is going to be for jokes, that there's not going to be a lot of heart to it, that a lot of times it's going to be very cognitive and based on the gags and the puns and the double entendres and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. I do think that you do offer a lot of those things in these books. There are great uses of language, which, you know, I would imagine would stem out of your being involved in studying of linguistics.
Yep.
there are definitely very, very, like, there are some side-splittingly funny moments and character interactions. But what I thought was cool is that it actually gets, there are points in the series where it gets a little intense, and where things actually can get a little serious, and you can sort of feel you can feel the stakes raising, and you actually start to care about the character the way you would in something that wasn't necessarily marketed for the satire, which I think is important, because at the end of the day, you're telling a story and you want people to be invested in your story and your characters, especially when you've got like as many of them as you have in this series.
Yeah, well, the trick is that this is a series about life and death, and if you can't talk about the serious stuff when you're talking about life and death, then I think you're doing it wrong. Of course, in my series, death is actually a pretty decent guy, and life is the one you have to look out for, because, you know, chaos and terror and just, like, all sorts of weirdness. But there is a fair bit of entertainment there, too. I'm not very good at the puns, I will admit that. As far as my language studies, I never studied puns, and so I know absolutely nothing about how to properly perform them. If you find any in there, they're accidental, I swear.
I mean, I meant more like maybe allegories was a better term, like where you're talking about death and taxes, for example. where taxes will come in and, you know, be embodied, and life is actually an embodiment of an actual character. That's kind of what I was alluding to, but nevertheless, it is very well done. Highly recommended.
Thank you.
I asked this question because I'm guilty of this myself, tremendously guilty of it. Like pretty much every protagonist has some elements of myself. Every female, I guess, love interest or female strong protagonist character is sort of an avatar of my wife. Mm-hmm. One of them actually is fully an avatar of my wife. What I wanted to ask is, do you use yourself and people in your personal life to influence and create characters in your writing? And if so, can you give me some examples?
I usually only take very small elements of people and throw them into a character, because I'm trying to create someone who is like the embodiment of joy and cheer, the assistant for Cal, Yolanda the Rock Troll. She is highly cheerful, but she's also terrified of anybody who has more power than she does, which is pretty much everybody. So how can you have both of those things? And I don't know anybody who is both cheerful and terrified all the time. So I take bits and pieces. Okay, this person does this when they're happy, and this person does this when they're terrified. So it's not an individual person per se, but more just, this is what I've noticed people do when they do this. As far as my own personality, you can definitely see that in Cal, when he is extremely literal and doesn't actually understand the subtleties of human interaction. That would be me to a T.
Really, I've never really gotten that from you, but at all.
Yeah, that's called masking. So I'm autistic, and what I do when I do social interaction is I mask, and it's based on years and years of people watching and figuring out, okay, how do people interact in this situation? And therefore, how do I interact in this situation? If you see me completely unfiltered, I am literal and wild and sometimes crazy and sometimes flat, and it's not very good at the whole people thing.
Well, you're doing an excellent job, because I never would have guessed that at all. But no, that's really interesting. And I appreciate you sharing it too. So let me ask you this, because you are now, in the process of self-publishing, I don't know, book number, I think, what are we at, 7?
I am writing book 7, book 3 just came out.
No, I'm talking about total overall
total number of books. Hold on, let me count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 on the science fiction and fantasy side, and, well, okay, 8 if you include my free newsletter book. And then on my romance side, which I write as Evelyn Grimald, I've got 4 plus a free novelette for newsletters. So, I don't know, awesome. A bunch.
Yeah, so you've been doing this for a while, and you've, so what I wanted to ask is, as a self-publisher, there's obviously definitely some things that I've heard that people love about the process.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a self-publisher. I'm actually just jumped into it. And there's also been, you know, some things that people would target as obstacles or pitfalls or you know, roadblocks. What has been your favorite element of the process of self-publishing your work? And what are some of the things that you found to be a little bit more challenging?
As far as the publishing process goes, the fact that I can control the story a bit more and control how things are put together and done, as opposed to relying on the, I don't know how to describe it, the mass market, who influences the traditional publishers, who then push their editors to say, we want this. And then they take a story that is pretty close, but they need to twist it a little bit. And so there's just a bit more control over my works and how I publish them and when I publish them and that sort of a thing. Also, self-publishers get more royalties out of the deal, even if our marketing effort requires a whole lot more involvement than I would like. Marketing is awful. Anyways, what was the rest of the question? Favorite bits of self-publishing? Also, hiring cover designers.
Right.
The other part was the
pitfalls or the obstacles.
Pitfalls, marketing. It is really hard because there are loads and loads of people out there, and it's not always based on the quality of the book that determines whether or not you do well. It's based on how well you can get those loads of people to see you and actually buy your product, which is hard.
It is a little bit of, unfortunately, well, not necessarily unfortunately, because, you know, it could be fortunately for some. The indie publishing world is a little bit of a combination of art and science, or art and mathematics.
Yes, and I'm not very good at math.
Yeah, there is a process, a meticulous process involved, that is kind of an ongoing, evolving process of a knowledge base. But fortunately, a lot of those things are tangible things that people can actually learn.
Yes.
Whereas being a good writer is not always something that somebody can learn. There are people that are innately bred to write.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some people that aren't. So it's cool that, you know, somebody that has the craft down is able to do these things and figure out how to do these things, and a lot of times make a career out of writing.
Yes. Yes. Also, there are small companies out there who will do some of these things for you, i.e.
yes,
cover design. And
yeah,
there are some people who will say, yes, we'll manage your Amazon adverts and that sort of thing, which
yeah,
is grand, because I need that.
I'm very fortunate as somebody that is completely technologically devoid. I actually have somebody who's less technologically devoid than me, my podcast partner, James, that is handling all the technology for this for me, so that
yeah,
I can just talk to you. So that makes things definitely easier as well.
Yeah.
I want to stay on that last sort of realm of questioning for a minute. When you write, do you have a particular market or audience in mind, or do you kind of write for yourself and just hope that people like where you're going and come along for the ride.
I write what I want to read, but I also know that what I want to read tends to fall into certain categories because I look at the categories at the bookstores and say, well, this is good, but it could do this. And well, this is good, but I'd like to see this. So I tend to write in a market just because that's what I want to read. It's not intentionally, oh, I'm going to write YA, fantasy, dystopia, whatever. No, I want to read a story about this. It happens to fall into this market. So that's how I will market it.
Cool. Yeah. No, I mean, I've heard that. I've heard that before. I don't know if I ever, for my own stuff, actually thought about a market. I just knew that I wanted to write funny stuff.
Seems to work just fine.
I appreciate that. And then I appreciate you reading it. One of the things that I find amazing about writers like yourself and writers like James Reed, who I co-write with, and Kelly mm-hmm. Blanchard and Andy Peliquin, I could go on, but let's stop there, is the immense prolificacy of the writing. Because you told me just now, you had told me this before, but I had forgotten, that aside from these fantasy and sci-fi books and this whole roadmap of work that you've, a lot of it that you've written that you're waiting to for the right times to get it edited and put out, you're also writing a bunch of romance books. And it blows my mind because when I try to do that, I think I've written a lot and I'm like, wow, I've actually done some real writing on this book. Mm-hmm. And then I'll put it through a word counter and it'll be like 15,000 words. And I'll be like, no way. There's no way that was only 15,000 words. I feel like I've been writing my heart out for like a month. And uh-huh. then I'm always in regular conversation with people that are writing these massive, like 250,000 word novels, and they just keep going and going and going. What is the secret to your prolificacy and how do you do it?
I will say this first. It doesn't actually matter how many words you write. It's all about the quality. I have read books 300,000 words, 800 pages long. And okay, your story is eh. And you have too many words talking about this. So cut it in half and you would be at an excellent story.
Right.
So, but as far as how I write so quickly, it's just how my brain works. I'm a language nerd and I think in words all the time and I never stop thinking about stories and I have notebooks filled with ideas and plots written out and it never stops.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I mean, I am an advocate for, like, if I read a really short book, like I've read a few books that are like that clock in it, I don't know, 165 pages.
Sure.
And I've read them and I feel like everything is perfect. I don't feel like I've read a short book. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've read a good book. And I will actually write a review where I'll say, this is an example of what you can do with 165 pages if you were a good writer.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely hear what you're saying. And there's for sure an argument on that side. But it blows my mind when I read really good stuff and it, by authors that are continually churning it out. It's always really good. So that was kind of what I wanted to know. And you answered my question. So thank you.
Yes. No, my brain just never stops.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's awesome. So you mentioned Douglas Adams in my first question, but I just wanted to talk a little bit about other influences on your work, sort of external influences. So I'm talking not necessarily just books and authors, but also film, directors, even music. What are some of the artistic influences, aside from Adams, that have influenced your writing?
Well, as far as films, television, movies, etc., that sort of a thing, I'm actually really, really terrible at remembering actor names or who directed what. It's just something in my brain says, nope. But if you point out a character, I can say, okay, this person was that character in this and that character in that, and I still have no idea what their actual name is. Like Firefly, the characters show up, okay, here, Captain Reynolds, and then he was Castle, and then whatever, but...
Nathan Fillion.
Thank you. Yeah, see, I don't remember his name. Okay. And so it's more just stories as far as the films and television and whatnot, and I care more about the stories. And I will say that I've not seen a whole lot of modern stuff that is very good at all. It's really depressing, actually, because Amazon and Netflix and all the other streaming services, they'll put out boatloads of new content. Oh, look, 6 new television shows that you can watch. But how many of them are actually very good?
Right.
Not many. So I tend to watch things that were done early 2000s up through probably 2017. Those are the ones that I found to be really good on the story. And the modern ones, I have found very few that keep up that quality. And this is going way far away from the question, but
I'm with you on that. Actually, one of the few shows that I've watched that I really felt like delivered immensely was the I don't know if you got a chance to see the Unfortunate Events adaptation, like this.
Who did that show. One?
It was it's based on the children's novels.
No, I know the novels. I just don't remember which service did that one.
Oh, it's on. I think it's on Netflix. It's with Neil Patrick Harris plays Count Olaf, and he just like hams it up. All in everything the guy does with all his immense talents find their way into the show, and it's just it was brilliantly done, beautiful to look at, and just immensely like well put together for a modern TV series. So.
I'll have to look at it. I haven't seen that one.
I would recommend that if you're looking for something sort of current, post-early 2000s, where they did a really good job. Yeah, definitely check that one out. A few more questions for you. I know that we've talked a little bit about On Behalf of Death, which is obviously the series that's rolling out right now. But you have written... a standalone novel, Speaker of Words, and also a trilogy, the Wing series. I'm saying it wrong. Is it the Wing?
The Wing Cycle.
Wing Cycle. I was going to say Wing Chronicle because I say Chronicle for everything. the Wing Cycle. I have not read Speaker, but I have read The Wing Cycle, and it was excellent. So just take a couple of minutes and tell everybody about... that series and that other book.
Sure.
So people that are maybe not into satirical fantasy but want to read something different that you write would be able to check those out as well.
Sure. I'll start with Speaker. Speaker of Words is my homage to linguistics. That sounds really terrible. It's actually not that literary. It's a society, a high-tech society who is kind of ruled very utilitarian, or not utilitarian, very, political words that escape me. They're ruled by a republic in name, and the people who work for them are assigned roles in this society, and they live according to those roles, and that's pretty much what it is. Until one day, a group of rebels gets together and asks questions about, okay, what does freedom mean? And they say, oh, well, it's working within the bounds of society to create your best self. And they say, no, this is what it really means. And it's kind of a, how can you know something's broken if you don't have the words to describe it? Language over thought, or thought over language, is the fundamental argument there. But it's also a dystopian rebel novel where you've got a main character trying to suss out rebels and create problems. And it was fun. I had great fun with that one. So that one's firmly in the dystopian sci-fi realm of things, with a bit of extra language in there. And The Wing Cycle is epic dark fantasy. Not hugely dark, but definitely dark enough. As in, my family should probably never read these books because they're a little bit violent and a little bit dark on themes. Because some things should not be shared with the family. And these follow a sylph, Ravenna. She grows up in the society of sylphs. They are isolated on this island until one day she gets captured by humans. And she is like really interested in humans because while the other sylphs can fly, she cannot. She was born deformed. And then she discovers that, well, maybe humans aren't what I thought they were and are more nightmarish than otherwise, until she kind of integrates into their society and figures out what her place is in the world, and then makes friends and has to save both her people and the friends that she made without compromising herself.
Yeah, and it's
all I can say without spoilers.
And it's really excellent. It's very well written. If you like epic fantasy, and you like, and there's some really cool flight descriptions. So if you like that kind of thing, I would strongly recommend this series, because I found myself getting very lost in it. So it's definitely, The Wing Cycle is definitely one I would recommend.
Thank you.
To anyone listening.
I do have a second series following The Wing Cycle in the works. I just finished replanning and plotting book one, and I'll start writing on that as soon as I finish book 7 of On Behalf of Death.
You're ready. One step ahead of me. You just answered my next question without without me even asking it. But what the question was, because you might end up wanting to expand on that, what is coming next? Like, what can people that are reading your books look forward to in the next year?
Sure. So for the rest of this year, y'all are just going to have to deal with satirical fantasy. That's how it works. I have book 7 is being written. It will be finished and should be released sometime. I don't have my calendar in front of me. I want to say sometime in December, but I've got books being released every 3 weeks up until that point. So that'll go through the end of the year. And after that, I will continue doing Calthorpe books, because I have many plans for him, but they won't be as frequent. Instead, I have a companion series about time, which is going to be fun, because who doesn't like messing with time? That'll start rolling out in the spring, and also hopefully sooner than later, I will get that other series called the Fire Wars Saga out. This is the continuation of The Wing Cycle. Not the same characters. You will see some familiar faces, but not the same characters. It is takes place in the same world about 20 years after the end of The Wing Cycle. So that'll be fun and dramatic.
Wow. Awesome. Lots of stuff to look forward to. The time thing does sound awesome. I'm definitely on board for that one.
It will be highly entertaining. Let's just say the 1970s are off limits.
Nice. I like to... I'm gonna get you to tell people where they can find you after that. But I like to kind of formally end all my interviews with this question: what one piece of advice would you be able to offer to new and aspiring authors?
Keep writing. Nothing else matters if you can't get words on the paper.
Right. And I mean, I'll add. I was actually podcasting. Last week on Book and a Pint, because I noticed there's a lot of negativity in the author world. My Facebook is predominantly used for work. Mm-hmm. So it's mainly writing community people that I'm networking with. And there's so many authors that are posting, you know, over and over again, not singling anyone out, but just these, you know, Facebook background or the Facebook emojis, where they're saying, oh, this sucks or that sucks or I can't write or this is no good and I want to give up writing. And it's really unfortunate, because I like to see people that believe in themselves. And I know sometimes that's a hard thing to do. Everybody's experienced and felt imposter syndrome in creative arts before. It's definitely a real thing. But at the same time, that's how a lot of them are doing it on their author pages, which are what they're using to sell their work. So if they're saying they don't believe in their work, then how are other people going to want to tap into that? Yep. So it's definitely very important to kind of, you know, treat it like a business, treat it like a representation of yourself and your work and your creative capacity and what you're doing. And realize that there aren't really any right answers. You don't have to write 12 books a year.
No, absolutely not. You can write
what I mean?
One every 2 years. I know people in the indie world who do that and still are successful.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, like, I started writing Alehouse Wars, and I got to a point that I didn't even want to try to write aerial battles and magic and choreographed fights. So I reached out to James, and we ended up with this collaboration that's lasted like a year, and we keep going. So there are other options for people that feel like they're stumped or they're experiencing what some people call writer's block. So
sure. Yeah. It's just a matter of getting something on the page. And even if it's terrible, you can always go back and edit it. Or get someone to read it and edit it for you, whichever is your preferred method. But if you don't write at all, you will never improve.
Right. So in other words, don't. Yep. Go ahead.
There's a reason why I write so many different things is because, going on with one story and I have no idea where my characters are going next, even though I've planned this out. So I will stop and write something else or work on something else. And amazingly, the subconscious brain kind of still does things while you're doing other stuff. So you keep thinking about your stories and you keep writing your stories. And even if it's not the same story all at once, you'll be okay.
Don't give up. Keep on trucking.
That would be accurate. Yes.
And it'll work out. EG, tell us where people can find you online. You actually you used to podcast. You have a blog and you do interviews, and you're very helpful to people in the writing community. So tell people a little bit about where they can find your books and also where they can find out more about some of that other stuff you do.
Sure. If you want these fantasy sci-fi stuff, my website is egstone.com. If you're more interested in the romance side of things, go to evelyngrimault.com. As far as book reviews and interviews and all that stuff, if you want me to read your book or do an interview, all interviews are text-based, then you can send me a message on Facebook, you can send me an email, or you can go to quillandpen.com, which is where most of that lies. I also have stuff on YouTube, which I post weekly. Those are just book reviews for now. I'm working on some thoughts on how to change up my channel, but I'll hold that off for a good long while because I have other plans.
Awesome. You heard it. EG, it was absolutely amazing talking to you today. And congratulations on the new series and best of luck on what seems like a lot of amazing work in the near future.
Ah, that's the plan. Keeps me off the streets.
That's a good thing. Talk to you soon.
All right. Have a great day.
You too.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my satirical fantasy novels on Amazon. Need help finding readers? Connect with me on Facebook in the Fantasy Sci-Fi Focus group or at authorsinfocus@gmail.com. You can find more episodes of this podcast at fantasy-focus.com and where your favorite podcasts are hosted.